Education Committee meeting of our 2012. Light system on?
No.
Mine is.
How are things?
Well, welcome. We've got a couple of housekeeping things first before we go to our agenda, which is just one bill. And first is to welcome our new member, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's been since 2006 that I haven't been on this committee.
So
we have to re-educate
you. We'll try to get you up to speed as quickly as possible.
Thank you.
Welcome. And we also have a new Shelby McQuay I'd like to introduce him, have him introduce himself. Kent Branica.
Branica. Very nice.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
He's our new legislative analyst, and so let him tell you a little bit about himself, and we welcome you to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Senators. My name is Kent Hranica, and I was raised in Cottage Grove, Minnesota. Went away for a couple of years to Wisconsin to earn a degree in political science and history with the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. Went on to get my master's degree from the University of Minnesota in public policy, and then for the better part of last year, I've been working for Minnesota Management and Budget with their fiscal staff in the budget division, and am very happy to be working on the Education Committee as nonpartisan staff. So thank you very much. Look forward to working with all of you.
Well, welcome. Also, I want to explain, in your packet, there's an invitation to a conference or a seminar, whatever you want to, or symposium, on reading. Fancy hearing anything about reading from me. But there's attached to it, it's kind of quickly put together. I have to confess, this is mine. There's no letterhead and no signature. But it is the message that I received from John Alexander that to extend this information to my colleagues in the Senate, particularly on the Education Committee, and encourage them to come, and that he's waiving the registration fee. If you'd like to be there for breakfast and lunch, they'd appreciate the cost of $25 for that, but waiving the $100. And if you note the credentials of the people on the back, they line up not only with a lot of the things that we've been dealing with in terms of our literacy issues, but also the going forward, the RTI model here is one that that Todd Bush has become expert in, and Anthony Pedriana, some of you may have picked up. I had some extra copies of the book that he wrote. He's going to be there to discuss some of the challenges of the implementation. And Marianne Wolf has done a great deal of research into the methods that work. And so these are all things that we have, I think, are linked to our goal of having reading proficiency by third grade and seeing that as key to closing the achievement gap. So that's what that little extra note is about. And I would encourage you, Fridays often aren't too full here, that I'd love to see some more folks on the committee, since this is going to be my last hurrah this round, kind of pick up the banner and the passion for achieving that goal of reading proficiency by third grade. So I just want you to know about that and hopefully encourage you to participate. And if you know of others that should, we'll work to see that they are accommodated. And I think there may be some of our committee staff may want to get some exposure there if you're interested. I don't think they let you have a copy of it or not, but we'll see that gets taken care of so that we can work on that. Is that good? All right. Our one bill today is Senate File 1493, a new introduction by Senator Daley. It may look familiar to most or all of us in that it did pass the Senate previously, and actually in two forms after the conference committee report. But when it went to conference committee, the House made changes in it. And when it went to the governor, It was vetoed virtually over the changes the House made. Apologies to Representative Erickson. They appeared to like the Senate version. So the concerns that were addressed in the governor's veto message, Senator Daley has incorporated either, I don't know if it's in the bill or in an amendment you're going to offer, but I'll turn it over to him and he can present the bill.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and Chairwoman, and to all members. And I just reiterate what you mentioned before. Welcome, Senator Tomasoni. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Rest of you, if you want to say something, go ahead.
It's great to be back in the saddle here.
Bring a bill.
Last year on this committee, we took up Senate File 170, as Senator Olson mentioned, which is a bill to require teachers to pass a basic skills exam in math, reading, and writing prior to admission to a teacher program. It passed unanimously, as she said, here in the Senate two times, and it had wide bipartisan support over in that other body. Although Governor Dayton vetoed the legislation after the regular session ended, there were two changes that he wanted, and we can easily accommodate those two changes, and we have in the bill and the author's amendment that I'm going to offer here in just a minute. So that brings us to Senate File 1493, and as I just mentioned, I do have an author's amendment to get this bill into the shape and form that I'd like it to be.
Can we have that
distributed?
That's
the A4 amendment.
I don't think it's in your folder.
Members, I'd like to draw your attention to the veto letter. I'm told it's in your packet. If you could pull that out now. It's a two-pager. And if you could go to paragraph 3, the third paragraph in the veto letter, and you'll see that in the second sentence, first, we do understand that teacher candidates who show promise as future teachers should receive additional educational support and remediation that they need provided by higher ed teacher programs. And we've accommodated that. We've included that in this. And the second, teacher candidates who completed their prep program in another state must pass the basic skills exam before they receive licensure in Minnesota. Those were the two issues that the governor had, the remediation and the out-of-state. And Governor Dayton stated in that letter, if they are ready to teach in Minnesota, they should be capable of and expected to pass the basic skills exam. He goes on to say, increasing the level of rigor expected for future Minnesota teachers is a goal I support, and we agree. So there are three items that I want to point out in the bill. If I could turn your attention now to Senate File 1493.
So, Senator Daley has offered the A1 amendment to Senate File 1493 as an author's amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, as I mentioned before, let's go to Senate File 1493. I draw your attention to lines 1, 2, and through 1, 5. So on page 1, 1.12 through 1.15. And you see that is the original language. There's nothing underlined. There's nothing crossed out. It starts with, such rules must require colleges and universities offering a board-approved teacher prep program to provide remedial assistance to persons who did not achieve a qualifying score. So it goes back to the original language. Last year that was stricken, that they may. Not that they must, but that they may. So we've gone back to the original language of the statute. The second thing that I want to point out, and that's the out-of-state requirement. That's on page 4, lines 1.7 through 2.5. So 4.17 through 4.25. And you'll see that that language is all stricken. It's removed. And what that language says is that a person who has completed an approved teacher prep program and obtained a one-year license to teach but hasn't successfully completed the skills exam may renew the one-year license, and on it goes. And since this is out of state and we want to have it at the same level for out of state as in state, we just take that language out, and by doing that, the standard is the same. The third item that I wanted to draw your attention to, and that has to do with the amendment that we just included. And you'll see in the amendment lines 1-4 through 1-7, 1-4 through 1-6, that applies to page 4.5 through 4.9. And that language is all stricken because it no longer applies, because all teachers will have passed the basic skills exam before they go to get their teacher license. So the school districts don't need to offer the remedial assistance because they're not getting into the school districts because they've already passed the exam before they go there. So it doesn't apply, and that's what the amendment does. It strikes that out. The other item in the amendment is the effective date, and that is effective the day after enactment. Chair, that completes my introduction of this. There are some folks that would like to testify at this time, if that's appropriate to you.
Are there any questions of the author at this point? Otherwise, we have a few people, as you note, on the agenda that would like to testify. Senator Bana.
Madam Chair, and I probably just missed this, Senator Daley, but so where's the part in the bill or the amendment where we offer remediation to teachers that show promise that was in the governor's letter?
That is on page 1, lines 1-2 through 1-5, and that's the original language.
Page 1.
Of Senate File 1493.
Uh-huh.
1-2 through 1-5. And you don't see anything highlight or anything underlined or crossed out. It's just the original language.
I understand. Thank you.
I don't understand. I don't get it.
Are there any other questions?
Oh, Madam Chair.
Senator Bana.
And perhaps you'd like to do this at the end, but I do notice somebody from the governor's office or from the department seems to be here, so will we hear
yes, we'll
from
hear
them?
Anybody
Thank
who
you.
Wants to speak.
Okay.
We have Mr. Bartholomew, I think you're on first on the agenda.
It's about to take another time.
Madam Chair, members, Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and I kind of feel a heavy burden being the first person to testify before you this session. but I'll try and keep it quick. As you've mentioned, you've heard this bill last year, had testimony amendments, and you passed it twice unanimously. Under current law, a college student can enter a teacher prep program, complete and pay for 4 years of college, then be denied their license at the end of all of that because they can't pass the basic skills exam in reading, writing, and math. Under another scenario, a teacher moving to Minnesota from another state can enter a Minnesota classroom and teach kids for up to 3 years, again, even though they haven't been able to pass a basic skills exam in reading, writing, and math. Senate File 1493 helps the college student by letting them know up front that they aren't prepared and need additional work before they are prepared for a teacher prep program. And it also helps the classrooms full of students who would otherwise be taught by someone without adequate skills in reading, writing, and math. To close student achievement gaps and help all our students successfully compete in a global environment, our kids need the very best teachers possible. Senate File 1493 helps move us in that direction by setting a clear expectation that teacher candidates and teachers transferring from other states at least need adequate skills in reading, writing, and math. Thank you, and we'll hope this is the third time is the charm. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Bartholomew? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I don't think that your question was answered.
Ms. Hanna, is Bezanov?
Bezanov.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Snezhana Bezanov, and this is the first time I sit in front of you in this capacity. But I'm here on behalf of the School Boards Association and in support of this bill. Minnesota School Boards Association supports the proposed requirement for the candidates to pass the basic skills test before they enter a classroom, with high expectations for students, as well as legislative efforts to make classrooms more rigorous. This legislation would really hold teachers to the same standard as they do children, their students that they teach. They would have to pass a test before they get their license. Requiring aspiring teachers to pass this test before entering the classroom will really help improve the student achievement and close the achievement gap and hopefully increase the graduation rates. And this will also make the teachers more prepared and more aware of all the areas of study that they, you know, of all the areas that they're aware of. And so we deserve that our students are taught by the professionals who are proficient in the math, reading, and science. And so sit here in support of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. You are aware that the change that this bill makes is that they take the test before they enter the teacher preparation program,
yes,
rather than just before they get the license.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in agreement with that timing as well.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, Dr. Richard Sims.
Madam Chair and committee members.
Dr. Sims, welcome.
Thank you very, very much. I should have started up early knowing I'm third in line. I want to thank you for the opportunity to take part in the discussion today regarding Senate File 1493, legislation involving the Minnesota Basic Skills Test for Teacher Licensure. As indicated, I'm Richard Sims. I'm the Associate Dean of Educator Licensure Programs in the Richard W. Riley College of Education, here in Minneapolis. I'd also like to preface that I have been part of the teacher preparation activity in Minnesota for the past 24 years, most recently leading 19 years, 8 months of service with the Board of Teaching as the Supervisor of Teacher Education. And I think I'd like to testify to that point of being a supporter of the quality and high standards that Minnesota has set for teacher licensure. For more than 40 years, Walden University has supported working professionals in achieving their academic goals and making a greater impact in their profession and in their communities. Today, more than 46,000 students from 50 states and more than 120 countries are pursuing either their bachelor's, master's, or doctorate degrees online at Walden. Walden is the flagship online university in the Laureate International University Network, a global network of more than 58 online universities and campuses based in 28 countries. With our academic headquarters here in Minneapolis, and Walden University currently offers a Master's of Arts in Teaching, an MAT degree and program, which is approved and operates under the guidelines, standards, and expectations of the Minnesota Board of Teaching. I'd like to accentuate here that candidates nationwide, worldwide, select to attend Walden University because of the high-quality programs that are based on Minnesota standards for preparation. The students enrolled in our teacher preparation program reflect the greater Walden University student makeup, and that many are mid-career changers and who come to our program with significant work experience and a strong desire to pursue a second career in teaching. The MAT program requires that students already possess a baccalaureate degree before enrolling. We think that this makes our program unique and leads to strong and effective teachers that can provide their students with a wealth of real-world experiences and knowledge. However, as an online university, Walden students come from a variety of geographic areas, meaning that not all of the students who enroll in our teacher preparation programs are based in Minnesota. There are over 327 alumni of our MAT program coming from 50 states and territories. Changing the law to require that all teacher candidates, regardless of place of residence, pass a Minnesota-specific basic skills test before entering a teacher preparation program would provide a significant obstacle for those students who live outside of Minnesota and do not intend to teach in Minnesota. We have suggested language that would exempt those students in Minnesota Board of Teaching approved online teacher preparation programs like ours from having to pass the basic skills test before entering our program. If these exempted students did decide to pursue a Minnesota license at a point in the future, they would be required to pass the basic skills test at that time of licensure, as all out-of-state applicants for a Minnesota license are required. We believe that this solution maintains the strong standards that Minnesota wishes to enact and its teachers, without putting a significant burden on these candidates enrolled in board-approved programs and who live and intend to pursue a teaching license in or career in their home state. This language will require that Minnesota residents still pass the MTLE as a requirement for entry of our teacher preparation program. I want to thank you for the consideration of this amendment. We are committed to working with Senator Daley and the Governor's Office, MDE, and the Board of Teaching, and moving forward to ensure that all questions and concerns are addressed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Sims. Are there any questions? Senator Stock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The issue last year, I think the timing of when they take the test, didn't it center around trying to get more students of minority students and of different languages into the teaching profession? So the original language, I think last year, that required the test to be taken before they went into higher education. What this does is say that the test only needs to be taken when you right before you get your or before you get your license. So it seems like the amended version still leaves that door open for more minorities and for more different people of different skills to get in to the, you know, to the colleges and universities. Is that correct?
Senator Daley, you want to clarify that?
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, the language in 1493, as amended, requires students who are in a teacher prep program or want to enter a teacher prep program to have passed this basic skills exam. They must pass it before they enter into the program. However, if they're from out of state, they're not in a Minnesota teacher prep program, they're already a teacher in another state, they must pass the basic skills exam before they get a Minnesota license. So they're not going to, for out-of-state teachers, that's a different thing because they've already completed an entire program. But before they teach in Minnesota, they have to pass this basic skills exam. Does that answer the question?
Madam Chair, and I thought Dr. Sims just described the situation where they could go into the program without having to have passed it. Maybe I misunderstood you.
No, Senator.
Senator Daley.
Madam Chair.
Senator Daley.
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, my understanding is this is a request that he would like to see enacted as an additional amendment, but we haven't taken it up yet. We're just discussing.
All right. Thank you.
Senator DeCrave?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sim, I have a question for you. What percent of the students that would be required to take this before they could enter your teaching school, what percent would you estimate would pass or fail this test? Do you know?
Dr. Sims?
Madam Chair, committee members, Senator
DeCraft.
Of our candidates, we have approximately 350, 370 candidates in the program. Approximately 10% of those are pursuing a Minnesota teaching license. And within that number, we're very well within the performance of candidates in all of Minnesota's institutions on the basic skills test. Not getting off task, there has been question concerning the performance rate of all of our candidates here in Minnesota. I want to just assure you that what we're saying is we will not recommend for a Minnesota license a candidate who does not evidence passing that test. So I hope I'm answering your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, so there's two different things we're really talking about. One is the teachers that are intending to teach in Minnesota. So my question might be, what percent of those people would you estimate would be able to pass this test? And secondly, for all of the other teachers, the other 90%, are you thinking less of them? Might a lesser percentage of those folks might be able to pass this test or might not be able to pass this test?
Madam Chair, committee members, I would estimate, I'd really like to go to my IT people, my data people, I would estimate 65 to 70% of the candidates who take, and those are Minnesota individuals who take the Minnesota test, are passing it on their first attempt. Fortunately, there are multiple attempts that can be given. The fact being that until they pass that test, we are sure that they are not being placed in the field to serve our children. And the second part of the question.
So the Minnesota.
The other 300 plus candidates, they are required to meet their state basic skills requirements. So in other words, they're having to take two examinations. One, Minnesota's, where they have no intention of pursuing a license, and they also have to meet their own state requirements. So no, there's not an attempt to avoid. We want to maintain, and we will maintain high standards as required.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we know that a high-quality teacher is the most important school variable that we have in regard to student achievement. And so I really applaud Senator Daley for bringing this bill before us again. Making sure that we have the high-quality teachers in the classroom is one of those ways that we can reduce the achievement gap and that we can make sure that all of our students are ready for college and career. The genesis of this bill to raise the bar on high-quality teachers is very good for education and for our students. I think what we're entering into here, though, is a discussion that is just one discussion that we're going to have of many discussions as we look at how digital learning and online learning, to use one of the phrases that you so often use, Madam Chair, it's a disruptive innovation. It disrupts the way that we've always done things in our society. And quite frankly, what we're bumping up here against is the artificial boundaries of geography and how that impacts digital learning and online learning. So I understand the concern from our online teacher preparation programs. On the other hand, as we look into embracing more fully digital learning and online learning, I think one of the most important things we can do is treat our online providers and our bricks and mortar providers in an equitable manner. in the same manner. We don't want to have an unlevel playing field. And one of the concerns is that what about our institutions of higher education here in Minnesota, who have many students who come from many different states, but we're saying that those bricks and mortar institutions would have to have their teacher candidates pass this test prior to entering the teacher program, even though they might never plan to teach in Minnesota. Now, we hope we keep all of our Minnesota higher ed graduates. We'd like them to stay in Minnesota, and I think the statistics are, you know, about 80% of them do stay in Minnesota. But the point is, I'm a little uncomfortable having a different rules for our online teacher prep programs and our state college teacher prep programs. So just something to consider, but I think we're going to have this kind of discussion as we go forward with digital and online learning. The geography is kind of an artificial barrier in a sense.
Prefer to comment, Senator Hand?
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. I'm just, do we have an amendment before us that would...
We do not. At this point, we're just having a discussion that was based on our testifier.
Okay, I just was thinking that if this is something that we are going to entertain, it might be helpful to see language. But I'm not trying to inhibit the conversation. I just was curious if we're going to have an amendment or we're going to talk about doing something like this. Would be helpful to see the language. But
is anybody planning or wish to offer an amendment at this time? Or just let that go forward. This is, this is being reconsidered here as a result of as the way it had passed the Senate essentially twice. And it would go to the House, and I'm not sure what the House would plan to do, but presumably there's some interest there in an understanding that this is an issue there too. So, thank you, Dr. Sims.
Madam Chair, Committee, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Cindy Crist, Mr. Mackey.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I've come before this committee in the past as an employee of the Minnesota State Colleges and University System. I just want to be sure that those of you who remember me from those days know that I retired from MinSCU at the end of June, and I'm now handling legislative and policy issues for the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. So I'm only saying that as sort of full disclosure so you know the perspective from which I'm speaking. I'm not here for MinSCU, as I have been in the past. We have a handout that's been passed out to you, but because I know you can all read, I'm not only not going to read it to you, I'm not going to refer to all of the points, but I want to just highlight three basic things. But that said, I want to start out by applauding the legislature for your commitment to ensuring that all Minnesota students have high-quality, well-prepared teachers. That's a commitment that our 31 or 32 institutions, depending on whether you count St. John's and St. Ben's as one or two, share. We absolutely don't want to put any teacher in a classroom who doesn't have the skills and knowledge needed to be effective. However, before you take action on the bill, we would like to share some information that may help you understand the impact that this bill might have. And I want to focus on two things primarily. And some of this gets at a question, a couple of the questions raised by Senator DeCrieff and Senator Stump. And that is that because too many students of color arrive at a college or university academically behind, quote unquote, their white peers, requiring passage of the basic skills test for admission will, without a doubt, decrease the diversity of the teaching force. Not because we've determined that they can't become high quality teachers, but because at an early point in their academic careers, they have not yet mastered the body of knowledge that's assessed in this new higher-level basic skills MTLE test. As some of you may know, that the new test is set at a much higher standard or level than was the case in the past. In the past, it was sort of high school graduate level. Now it's set at a level that assumes students have mastered what we would expect a college sophomore to have mastered. To date, the pass rates on the new basic skills tests for individuals of color are just 20 to 70%, depending on the subtest. That's the pass rate, 20 to 70%. The second key point that we would like to make is that requiring passage of the basic skills test for admission will be problematic for many of our institutions because some, and perhaps many of our students, will not yet have completed the gen ed requirements that in effect serve as the foundation for this basic skills test. These tests, again, as I said, are set to measure skills expected to have been mastered by a college sophomore. Let me just give you three examples of why this could be problematic, one from each of our three sectors of higher ed. Students at Winona State are admitted twice each year, and most will not have completed their general education requirements by the time they would be required to take this test, if they have to complete and pass it before they're admitted to the College of Education. At the College of St. John's and St. Ben's University, general education courses are embedded across all 4 years of the program. So students who are being admitted, they generally seek admission in the second semester of the sophomore year, may only have completed up to half or less than half of their gen ed requirements. Again, requirements that are reflective of what's being assessed in the basic skills test. At the University of Minnesota Morris, majors apply in December of their sophomore year. So they would have to pass this basic skills test in the fall of their sophomore year, having completed only 1 year of college. There are related issues that would be challenging to higher ed of the required remediation. We absolutely are committed to providing it, but if it's required for students at that skill level, first of all, we would have to develop a whole new set of remedial instruction because currently what we're remediating is high school level skills, and this is at a higher level. Secondly, there's a very pragmatic issue of who would provide the remediation. If they're not yet in the College of Education, it's hard to envision how that remediation could be tailored by the College of Education to be specifically appropriate to people who want to become teachers. Those two issues aren't necessarily your problem. I just wanted you to be aware that these are some of the kinds of things with which higher ed would need to grapple in order to implement this test, this legislation. So again, our 32 institutions are committed to high-quality teacher preparation. Our students currently must demonstrate their competence on a wide array of measures throughout their time in our colleges of education. We just want to ensure that the tests required of our teacher candidates are fair, valid, and reliable, and that we only require teacher candidates to demonstrate skills and knowledge that have been shown to be predictive of teacher quality. We would prefer that our institutions have the flexibility to determine when their students should be expected to pass the basic skills test based on their own specific student makeup and the nature of their programs and program requirements. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions, Senator Hand?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just had a question. The fourth bullet point under your points to consider, the point says that students of color, non-native English speakers have achieved disproportionately lower passing rates than white students. And then you say the test results show a range of 20 to 70%. I'm not clear on what that means. That's a pretty broad range. Are you saying that it's somewhere between 20% and 70% of students pass? Or are you saying that depending on the subject that I'm not clear what that's saying, and I guess I'm, what is it for white students? What is the range? I would imagine there are white students that probably don't do so well and others that do, but I'm very unclear what the point is being made here.
Madam Chair, Senator Hand, this is part of the problem in trying to get something complex into one piece of paper for you, is that you have to leave out some of those details. Let me give you just one example. First of all, this is for all individuals of color, so and all three subtests. So there could be a particular subtest. Let's take the reading subtest, since that's, I know, of particular interest to our chair. On the reading test, and I do have more detailed information than this, but I'm not sure that it's supposed to be shared publicly yet, so that's also why we're trying to be a little more general here. Karen Baumer is here, and she can correct me on that if I'm wrong, if it is public information now. But so it could be that on the reading subtest, one subpopulation, let's just say American Indians, only achieved a passing rate of 20%. Perhaps on that same reading test, African-American students achieved a pass rate of 60%. And Asian Pacific Island students achieved a pass rate of 48%. I'm just making those numbers up, but that's just to give you an example. So this is kind of combining all of the groups of ethnicity that are broken out in the test results and all of the subtests. As to your question about white students, I don't have those data with me. We were just looking at the specific area of concern. I know that the pass rates are higher for white students. I believe they're significantly higher, but I haven't looked at those data recently, so I'm not sure how much they differ.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Bonner?
Madam Chair, could you address how those subgroups have done then when they've completed their 4 years? How do they do passing the basic skills test?
Ms. Chris? Madam Chair, Senator Bonner, I don't have that information, and I would be glad to get it for you. Obviously, to be recommended for licensure currently, all individuals have to pass the basic skills test. By that time, they've had their full college program. We've had multiple opportunities to provide them with remedial opportunities. So certainly the passage rate and the completion rate would be much higher for students of color. But I'll be happy to get that information and also to touch base with Karen Baumer, whoever would be appropriate, Senator Hand, to get you that information about white students.
A follow-up, Madam Chair?
Senator Bonner.
One thing I noticed, I had initially asked that question about the remediation because it wasn't clear to me whether or not this language addressed the concerns the governor had, but I still think there's a question about it because the beginning language talks about that you must adopt rules requiring a person to pass as a requirement for initial teacher licensure. So that's a different part of the bill, that it says you must pass it in order to be licensed. And then it talks about in that rule about being licensed, there must be you must offer remediation. But then there's a second thing that says the board must adopt rules requiring a person who enters a board-approved program to pass a skills examination as a requirement for entering that program. That's a different requirement than passing before licensure, and there's nothing attached to that part, which is different than the first part that says if there's a candidate showing promise that there's another path, a path for remediation while in that program. And I interpreted the veto message by the governor to refer to that. As I understood it, the governor, and I could be wrong, but that's why I was kind of interested what the department thought. It seemed to me the governor was trying to, and the commissioner, trying to make sure we had a pathway for the very population that we're trying to attract to still be in our programs and have a chance for remediation. And so that's a values question I think we had as a committee need to grapple with. Are we willing to let those people in these programs and continue their educational journey and be remediated, which, frankly, I think there is a rationale to say that, particularly given we want to up the numbers in those areas that we're concerned where they're underrepresented. So that's what I'm grappling with based on the testimony as well as the language in the bill.
Thank you. Would you like to address that, Ms. Christ?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I'm not sure that was exactly a question for me.
It's more than Senator Daly. Madam Chair, yeah. It's really Senator to Daly. Senator Daly.
Madam Chair, I have a question about either the question or the comment, and that is on the second part, Senator Bonoff, can you direct us to where you're seeing that language? I understand the first part in subparagraph 4, the B part, lines 1.12 to 1.15. Mm-hmm. Yep. It sounded like you were referring to a different area.
Then, Madam Chair, Senator Daly, then on lines 1.15, the added language is where we insert your intention, which is actually, no, it goes farther than that top part. It says we want them to pass it before they enter a program. there's no qualifying language that gives a pathway for remediation from that point rather than from the passing it before licensure point.
Yeah. Senator Daley, you want to comment on that? Or
I guess the comment I would have is to refer to counsel about what we read as the intent and the current language, and if she could provide some additional input.
You know, the challenge that we're bringing to the fore is one that we've been grappling with on a broader scale for some time. Mm-hmm. And that is that our kids coming out of high school are not necessarily meeting whatever the standard is of the higher education institution to that they believe will be required for them to be successful in that program. And what's been interesting, I mean, we've tried different incentives and pressure points on the secondary system, you know, and been pushing on the higher ed system. But one of the things that in the last year or so I became aware of through the Education Commission of the States is that they've been paying attention to what happened with the whole remedial education of basic skills programs that are going on in our colleges. And I was frankly kind of surprised that they said they aren't working. They aren't remediating. I mean, now maybe it's an overgeneralization, but apparently in some cases they have to take a course that's a remedial course, and once they take it, they can keep going, even though they may not still have achieved the competency that might be required. I mean, we're putting a pressure point here of saying that if we're ever going to crack this nut at the K-12 level, we need to be sure that we have teachers. I mean, the Bush Foundation is trying to work on how do we track people that are, you know, solid and have a command of the basic skills. And I also want to throw in that we've got to get to the point where we get past this low expectations, because if a person has of color or they're poor or whatever, that somehow they can't achieve the level of basic skills in order to be able to be effective, not only effective teachers, but be able to succeed in that program and not send them, you know, on a trip to failure through an academic program for preparing for something that they really aren't ready for. So I think the issue here is that Senator Daley is saying there should be some evidence that they're able to have a command of the basic skills sufficient to be able to be successful in this program. And maybe Ms. Baumer could talk with us about that as to how the test has been changed. I think you've got a new purveyor for this test and have set a higher standard of what, you know, what kinds of issues that were raised in that process and accommodation in terms of that remediation. Because I think if we're ever going to close the achievement gap, if we mean what we say, that we want high quality teachers, it's really hard to argue with the fact that when you enter that program, you should have a command of the basic skills. I mean, that's reading, writing, and math. It isn't going beyond that. And so, you know, if we back off, we're saying, okay, the status quo is okay, and somehow we've got to accommodate and either set up young people for failure, because I'm not sure what goes on in the teacher preparation program that somehow corrects for some of the remediation that may be needed that we now don't know about because we haven't tested them before they entered the program. So, I mean, that's long-winded, but it's what we are grappling with, and I think we have a responsibility for pushing the envelope and trying to see that we get that quality into our schools. And yes, we need the diversity there, but I believe that diversity should not be an excuse that somehow they can't achieve the basic skills to be able to be successful in those programs. Ms. Chris.
Madam Chair, if I could just comment. Our colleges and universities don't believe that students of color don't have the ability to meet the standards. What they know is that many of their students arrive at their programs without that level. It's a continuation of the achievement gap that started before many of them even arrived at kindergarten or pre-kindergarten. So what many of our programs are saying is that they believe that they can help those individuals who don't demonstrate those skills and that knowledge at the beginning of their program achieve it by the time they have graduated or they're ready to graduate. And as you know, they currently have to pass the test before they can be licensed. So our programs do not recommend any individuals for licensure who haven't passed the basic skills test. And I would add one more thing very briefly. Some of our colleges want to require passage of the test for admission to their program. Some don't. It depends a lot on how the program is structured, what the nature of their student body is, and therefore the skills and knowledge and abilities that those students bring with them, and how the program has set up the sort of the passage from entry into the program through completion. So we also, as an organization, would not ask you to make it impossible for a college to require passage of the test. What we like is the current flexibility that we have, in which a college university may require it for admission if they think that works best for them and will help them ensure quality. Another college can wait to require it before the teacher is recommended for licensure, so they have that additional time that they believe will be helpful in getting a teacher, an individual who may have all the dispositions and skills that we want to be a teacher, but not come into the program with some of the knowledge.
What kind of track record have the graduates of your programs now had with passing the basic skills test? Do you have records of that, or do you follow up to know?
Madam Chair, I know that the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities have a measure of that that's part of the dashboard, the Minsky dashboard. I believe it's only reported in the aggregate of like licensure-specific tests. So I don't know what the numbers would be, but I do know that that MNSCU does look at that. On this issue, I can't speak for the other two systems because I haven't worked closely enough with them.
So the basic skills is not separated out in terms of?
Madam Chair, I don't believe that it is, but I'm not certain.
Maybe that's something else we could find out for you.
Maybe
Ms. Ballmer knows the answer to that. Okay. Can we put her on the spot? Thank you very much, Ms. Grist.
I have a question, Madam Chair, from Ms.
Grist. Oh, I'm sorry.
Ms.
Grist.
Thank you.
Did you have a question for Ms. Grist?
I have a question for Ms. Grist. Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Grist, I think you might be the right person to answer this question, but if you are not, if you could help me figure this out, because I think, you know, the premise behind this piece of legislation is a very good one. And I think what our chair is talking about is a very important message. And I think that we have really bipartisan support on that premise, that we need quality teachers, that we need to do whatever it takes to put teachers that have the skills in the classroom to help our kids succeed. Absolutely no doubt. So my question is more of a numbers question. I need to know how many people of color actually apply to go through this program and compare that to the number of white people that actually apply to go in the field. So if you compare those numbers, if I'm just thinking about the people of color that go to college today, okay, so we have only 47% of Latino kids graduating. Half of those individuals actually go to college, and less than half graduate, right? So I have a pool of people that if I compare Latino kids or African-American kids with white kids is absolutely small if we compare. So I want to know if we can compare the number of white teachers that actually are represented in the pool that will actually receive this license and will go on to be candidates to be in the classroom. My understanding is about, I don't know, 20-1. So you're left with one person of color that chose this profession, and that person might not be fully prepared. Now, for me, the question is, what do I do at that point, right? So the market today, the private market, says, I want that person who is bilingual. I really don't care because that person represents a group of people that I want to attract to my store. So Target will say, I really don't care if that person doesn't have all of the skill that I need in marketing. I need that brown face because it helps me, right, to achieve certain things. They know that there is only one person, right, out of these 20. There is only one. So they do whatever it takes to get that person to acquire the skill to help them become the market that they want to be with the brown market. We don't have that in education. And this notion that we need to have quality teachers in the classroom is absolutely essential. So I can't say that I do not support this. Yet, if I am put in a place where 10 years from now, and I don't think that's the intention of Senator Daley today, I will not see teachers of color in the classroom because of that mathematical equation of having only one person out of the 20 who are participating in this process of becoming teachers. Then I have a problem with that, right? So it is almost like I have to have this, but I have to have these other 50% in here that helps me get 10 out of the 20. So I have 10 white people and 10 people of color applying. So I have a 50-50 chance of getting qualified people. And if they don't pass, I'm okay with that because 5 will pass and 5 will not pass. So that's just a mathematical formula for me. But today that's not a mathematical formula. Am I wrong in analyzing the numbers with respect to getting teachers, the teachers that we want? So the concept is not what I am questioning. I'm questioning the path that we take to achieve the goal that we want to achieve today. Am I wrong with that?
Ms. Chris. Senator Olson, Senator Torres-Ray, no, I don't think so. And that's part of why some of our programs are so committed to the idea of not requiring passage of this test for admission to their programs, because they're committed to providing, first of all, we don't attract as many individuals of color into teacher programs as we would like to. That's a discussion for another day. But it does have relevance here in terms of the mathematics that you're discussing. And so we have some programs that have worked hard to attract a diverse group of individuals into their programs and who are fully committed to working with those individuals and doing everything they can to get them to the point that before they become licensed teachers, they can demonstrate the skills and knowledge that have been that we've measured and determined to be appropriate in that basic skills test.
Thank you. Madam Chair, and I just have a follow-up comment on this, because I think that this is kind of the fundamental question for us. So that when do we get to vote together on a concept that I believe is right, and I agree with you. But if I think about the future of the decision that we make today, that fundamentally changes the opportunities for teachers of color. So I have to think about that, right? I have to think about the possibility that if Senator Daley succeeds today, there will be no teachers of color unless we have a parallel process that we can entertain as legislators in higher education that says, no, we're moving forward. We're trying to figure out, you know, why is that we don't have enough people of color pursuing this so that we have the numbers that are necessary so that we can actually implement this. And I just want to leave that for the record because this is a very complex issue. By saying no to this, that doesn't mean that I don't care about quality or that I don't support this. Absolutely, it is not. It is that the consequence of saying yes today really presents some results that are very problematic for the classroom today. And for me, as a person of color, who cares very deeply about this issue, I have to think about that.
I would also note, you know, this committee doesn't have the jurisdiction over the higher ed, but we do have the responsibility of dealing with policy in the E-12 system. And that's where we have the issue. And so that should drive us to the point that why aren't we sending people that are competent, regardless of the color of their skin, so that they don't have to be intimidated by a basic skills test to be able to pursue something that they want. And by the same token, in that process of being effective there, Wouldn't more people make the choice that education has some potential than if they feel that they are not being, you know, well educated and prepared to go on? I mean, how do you attract them into the next step if we haven't prepared them well and they've seen that modeled in our K-12 system? So we've got plenty of work to do without even grappling at the higher ed level. But I think if there's anything that this while it's being focused on by higher ed, this should be an incentive and a driver to us in the K-12 system, which is what I see that we need to do. And I, you know, if there's more things that we can do, I think Senator Daley has gotten us going in that direction, and we cannot let that let up. And there's more and more focus on being college and career ready. You know, what is it that works? What is it that doesn't? Where are we putting our money? There's a lot of some basic questions here that our policy should be focused on. So I appreciate your comments, Senator Torres Ray. Senator Wolf, did you have your hand up?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if this will reiterate any part of what you had to say, Senator Torres Ray. My first question is a rhetorical question. That I have concern that, you know, all the emphasis is being placed on the student just before they get their license. To me, they would be a much better student if they had the skills in the beginning. How are they even passing their college courses if they don't have these skills? And I think it's better to, you know, I know you said you might have to change how you remediate. I think that's a good thing. Change the remediation process and get them prepared. I think it's important that we help the student in order to create students that can prepare to become the teachers. And I don't know how the various schools work these days. I know when I was in training, we started our sophomore year. Already we were in the classrooms. And so I think it's important if you wait until they're seniors or graduated and they're taking this test, they've been working with children for 3 years already, and they've been in the classroom. And so they need to be prepared before they go into the classroom with students. And I think it's very important to help them as students, make sure they're prepared as students, not just for teaching, but just as students. I have a hard time believing that you can pass college-level courses without basics. And so I think that should be step one, that you have the ability to show that you know the basics. And then you can move on to a lifetime of preparing to help students in that teaching process of knowing the basics and everything entailed in teaching. So I hope that, you know, remediation or whatever needs to be done to help those students who have the desire to become teachers is addressed early on.
Thank you. Is it Senator Bonner?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And one of the things that I was, I guess, swayed or, you know, or influenced in Ms. Christie's testimony was that our institutions of higher education approach this differently in different programs. So, for example, the St. John's, St. Ben's, I know my son is a junior at St. John's, and I can vouch for they do spread their math and science requirements throughout the four-year experience. And I want to remind members that this basic skills test isn't the same basic skills test that we require completing high school. This is actually, from what I understand, a higher level includes and encompasses college level coursework. And so I know, for example, my son took the math that he needed to, and he took math all the way through high school and now still has to have advanced science before he graduates from St. John's, and doing quite well there, but it's challenging. So I just have a suggestion of an amendment, Senator Daley, and would really just want to know if you would consider it friendly, and, you know, wouldn't go forward if you didn't consider it friendly. Okay? So, Madam Chair, Senator Daley, that what I might offer, and this is just rough words, is on line 1.17, after the period, insert, and again, this hasn't been wordsmithed, a board-approved teacher preparation program may accept candidates who have not passed and yet show promise. The program must provide remediation such that these candidates pass this test prior to applying for state licensure. And I offer that with the intention that we're sending a signal to these higher ed institutions that we expect that's who they admit, but if they want to go out on a limb for students that show promise, then they better make certain that remediation happens such that those candidates pass that licensure test before they can even apply. Just a suggestion to get at the opportunity for some local control, some flexibility based on an institution's own standards.
Senator Bonhoeff is up for an amendment. Senator Daley, do you wish to respond to?
Before responding myself, Madam Chair, I think it would be helpful to have some discussion amongst the committee.
We do. We are waiting for another amendment. I think there was some mix-up in the language of your author's amendment, and so I think the correct draft is being prepared so that we can change that. And I don't know if that's is in a fashion that changes or addresses anything that we've been talking about. But Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I believe last year there was testimony that the basic skills exam was somewhat similar to what we expect high school students to be proficient in. Then there's the suggestion that maybe it's more rigorous. It includes some college material as well. Could that be clarified? You know, are the expectations in this test going to be different than what we have for basic skills high school? Recognizing the math is still different.
Ms. Baumer, would you address that? I know we're kind of left you hanging.
That's
you're just exploring. It isn't officially offered, but maybe there can be some wordsmithing. I don't know if this council is working on taking that language and creating whatever here. Okay. Ms. Baumer.
Thank you. Madam Chair, for the record, Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Pleasure to be back with you. Again, this session, you waste no time. Senator Wieger, to your question, and it's been raised now a number of times, to the effectively the equivalence level of the what we now call the MTLE, the Minnesota Teacher Licensure Examinations. Those are new as of September 1, 2010, and you're right. They're in the sense that there is a difference in what we know to be the equivalence or the threshold or expectation in the MTLE as compared to our former series, which was called the Praxis 1, basic skills, reading, writing, and mathematics. And we know we were never able, prior to about a 6 months ago, able to benchmark those old Praxis 1 tests that we used because they are nationally used tests. So what we might consider a high school sophomore level in Minnesota, some other state might actually consider something more like high school graduation. So they were never able to benchmark those basic skills tests until the interstage left the Common Core, and they were able to use those Common Core standards to do a crosswalk and to do some of that analysis. And so there is a report that was published last fall, and it was jointly published by the NEA as well as ETS, which is the parent organization that offers the Praxis. And that report states that the basic skills under the Praxis, our old system, the mathematics was about at the first 2 years of high school, and that reading and writing were at the set at the level of, the exact quote is, cover skills that do not exceed a high school level. So that was the testing structure that we had in place, again, prior to September 1, 2010. The MTLE, when the board was in the development process for that, they charged the development to be set at what they called a college experienced level. Now, there is no such thing as sophomore level standards, freshman level standards. They don't exist in college. So how you might interpret that would, and how the board interpreted that, was that that would be about someone, obviously, that's been accepted to an institution of post-secondary learning. They are reading college level texts. They're writing in college courses. They're not in remedial math courses. So there is a difference. And I hope that provides some clarity for you, Senator Wieger.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Senator Wieger.
If we put on the potential amendment discussed where we could waive that requirement, you could be, in effect, student teaching and not be proficient in any of those categories.
Senator Ms. Ballmer?
Madam Chair, Senator Weir, yes, as I understand that there are multiple places where you could put that, set that requirement, but student teaching does happen within the confines of the program and is before licensure. So it would be possible that a teacher doing their student teaching may not have passed those basic skills tested. In fact, that's the case today.
And Madam Chair, Ms. Ballmer, do you offer your professional opinion on that as we look at increasing rigor?
Madam Chair and Senator Weir, well, we know that it's a complex set of issues that we're looking at today. We do know that we have introduced a series of basic skills tests that do have a higher threshold of expectation. We have learned a great deal in that transition year, and so where we came down on this last year was we thought we were able to support the bill when the effective date was set out, as you see in what's proposed before you today, to September 1, 2014. I think that there are some system implications for our colleges and universities as they're recruiting and admitting candidates into their programs. The program designs and structures that are already in place, our ability to meet the needs of within the testing infrastructure. So I think the board is comes before you today with some kind of cautious support. We don't disagree with the premise of the bill. We want to be careful and strategic in how we go about implementing it. So I hope that gives you enough.
Yep.
Senator Stephen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't want to be repetitive, but I just wanted to clarify that if it does come to happen where the board adopts the rules as the bill requires, stating that candidates must pass this test, and the result is that large groups of students are not able to pass it, couldn't you not adjust the test so that then you could come back and change the test? Because it seems to me, looking at this from a higher perspective, is if we're testing students before they enter a program, the test should be cumulative of their high school curriculum. You want them to be able to pass what they should have learned in high school, period. But we don't really want to test them on what they may be learning in their teacher preparation program. So if the legislature passes this type of legislation, isn't it possible for the board just to adjust the test so that you kind of test the students at that point? I guess I'm not seeing why it's not that easy.
Ballmer?
Madam Chair, Senator Stephen, you're right. The board, there are several things that fall within the board's purview. One is the adoption and development of the test itself. It's not easy to change that. There's a whole development process that we go through, and I can spare you, or I can share those details with you.
Could you just pull the mic a little closer to you?
Certainly. Is that better, Madam Chair?
Thank you.
So the test development itself, refining the item banks of what's on that, the equivalency level, the threshold that I talked about, and also the cut score required of candidates falls within the board's purview. So right now they have set that that cut score. So you meet that cut score and off you go. You don't meet that cut score and you need to retake and continue to attempt. Those things do fall within the board's purview.
You know, it's we did pass out some sample items from I think that's from the new of the new test. So it's being able to read and understand and draw, respond to some questions related to what you're reading. I didn't take the time to read all of them and see whether I felt comfortable that I could answer all of them correctly. But nonetheless, I think it's the basic comprehension of not only being able to read and understand, but comprehend and demonstrate that. I'm not sure how much difference there is between what we would expect coming out of high school and what the 1 year of college would in fact do on that. If the notion that Senator Bonhoeff is proposing in terms of that waiver And the colleges, this is kind of for Grist, is that they would make some judgments and be working through so that they could, in fact, pass that test. If the students didn't pass the test when they completed it, would you accept the notion that perhaps they ought to have their years of tuition in the teacher ed refunded to them? If in fact that is what's happening, that you are going to remediate or cover for what they might not have come with, and they will now have achieved that by the end of their program.
Madam Chair, that's a very interesting question. I think if it's posed to teacher preparation, it would probably have to be proposed for all of our programs, at least those that lead to licensure. I don't know why you would single teacher preparation out from social work and public health and whatever. But that certainly is a point to be discussed. And I know that some of our programs that have talked about requiring it for admission to their programs have talked about it for that reason, because they're concerned about having students make that commitment of time, talent, resources, and not ultimately be able to get licensed. They'll still likely have a degree, so you can't say that the time and energy and effort and money they've put into their education have been totally wasted. But if they have not led to the credential that they seek, that is a difficult, more than difficult, situation for that individual. And so, again, I know that's why some programs have looked at requiring it for admission, because they're concerned about students who would get to that point. Most of them, I believe, feel fully confident that they'll be able to get virtually every candidate to the point of passing the test. And if they didn't believe that, they wouldn't keep them in the program.
Thank you. Well, I think it's obvious. I thought we were going to have a short meeting today. And obviously, we've used all our time, maybe because we've had it and we're launching it for the Senate. I think maybe the first committee, policy committee in discussion that we've had. And Senator Daley, this whisks through. It seems a very, very logical, simple concept that why not? It just changes the timing and assures that these skills are achieved. But we probably are going to need some more discussion on it. But have we got the amendment now that's corrected?
Madam.
Let's distribute that, and let's put that in the shape that it needs to be. And then I believe we may want to just lay it on the table and come back to this rather than just to rush, and everybody can have a chance to reflect on what we've heard and before we send it to the House to do work their will on it.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Daley.
Along those lines, I would like to withdraw the A1 amendment and offer the A3 amendment.
Okay, that we've already passed that, so move to reconsider the A1. So Senator Daley moves to reconsider the A1 amendment. Any discussion on that? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, so we now have that up for reconsideration. Now you would like to withdraw it and substitute the A3 amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair.
So Senator Daley is offering the A3 amendment. Is there anything you'd like to point out about it? I mean, it's an author's amendment, so we're not going to get into big debate on it.
But. Well, let's, Madam Chair, briefly talk about what the differences between the two are. I will admit, I don't know what they are.
Oh. My apologies.
Madam Chair, members, the A3 amendment, the new amendment, has language that's not in the A1 on lines 1.4 through 1.7, which makes changes to the bill on page 4, starting at line 4.
Madam Chair.
Just a second here. Yes?
The A3 amendment is what I thought the A1 was.
Okay, so it's
this is the right one. I'm not sure how
A1. It's in other words, it's in the proper form to do what you were intending to do with the A1. Okay, is it all in favor of the A1 amendment or A3 amendment? Signify by saying aye.
Madam Chair, just a question. So you could graduate summa cum laude and still, walk the stage, but you still haven't passed the test. Is that
right?
Okay.
So on the A3 amendment, which is substituting, it's the right form for the A1 author's amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. So we will lay the Senate file 1493 on the table and be prepared if there's any more discussion that we need. We will take it up very soon and move it on its way. Thank you, Senator Daley.
And thank you, Madam
Chair.
Thank you
all for participating in that discussion.
Thank you.
The meeting is adjourned.
Madam Chair, where do we meet next?
We're just
looking at
a
legislative
liaison in the past, and we're just kind of feeling our way through.
It's a circle, yeah.
That's what I'm doing. I was going to go to their briefing at 4 o'clock. That's kind of a
challenge.
How about you?
I think maybe it sounds pretty good.
Some friendly faces.
I was saying,
I think that's good. I think that's good all the way around.
Yeses and seven noes.
How much is in it for Rochester?
Here it says that it was motion to adopt. It's the only thing I can think of. But ask me, Marie, it's just a little theory. I don't know. You hear the terms you read. Bradley! Indeed! All I'm doing is that's fine. There ought to be enough in the sitline stuff and arguments I suspect you'll want to make. Just based on I got a great logo for you, Phil. It's a small little weasel. Oh, Greg is politer than I am. Really?
Congratulations, Jim. When's the date? Yes, a long time ago, but we're going this year.
So last year you just spoke
to Abby and I were just talking about it. I think we're going to Spain this year.
Well, that's on our list. Something you like in my head.
Casey didn't live in Spain because there was Tango festivals. I wouldn't go there because again, that's like me saying there's a big cycling race in September. Did you hear I said I didn't care? I just conveyed it. No, congratulations. I'm really happy for you. Is he? Where'd you find him? A Tango fan? Really? Did he give you one of those looks when you're on the dance floor that you were telling me about?